Welcome to Podcast on Infinite Earths, an unofficial DC Studios podcast. I'm your host, Porter.
And I'm your host, Tyson.
And we're writers, editors, and part-time filmmakers who love superheroes. Welcome to our show.
Welcome back. Today is the long-awaited episode where we cover Man of Steel, the Zack Snyder film. And up to this point, the most recent solo Superman film that has been released. So we're going to start things off by just rapid fire, some quick news. We know it's been a couple weeks, and while there's not much, it's like minor updates, but just thought we would bring them up. But Tyson, you want to take charge on that?
Yeah, totally. They were talking about the first draft of the Batman 2 scripts being, you know, turned in on Memorial Day. And it looks like that has not happened yet, which is a little disconcerting because they gave themselves a hard deadline. And it seems like there are just still going to be delays. We're still hoping for, you know, maybe a roughly 2027 release date for that. But it looks like it's still just workshopping a lot right now.
Yeah, it really is too bad. I have faith that they'll figure it out, but
might just be a minute.
Yeah, it is a bummer though.
Yeah, but I mean, for major news outside of that, it seems like most projects are just still in the works. It sounds like they just very recently wrapped on Supergirl, which is exciting.
Yes.
They will be releasing that next year, and then obviously they have plans to be releasing Peacemaker later this year, which we're both super excited about.
For sure.
And yeah, beyond that, there really isn't anything major.
Yeah, little things, but still good to keep updated. Things to be excited about. So you want to just dive right in?
Let's do it. Yeah, so just from the very beginning, I would say this has the best looking Krypton out of any of the movies we've seen.
Oh, that's a for sure. I mean, you got in the first Superman movie, the Christopher Reeve one, it's cool, but you don't really spend time. You see them in like the weird council room, and that's kind of it. And then I guess you get to see the room where Superman gets launched, but I don't know. You don't really see much. There's no culture there.
No, you make a good point. I mean, for most of the renditions that we've seen, they really don't take you around the planet very much. They'll maybe like cut to an outside shot of things exploding, and obviously they'll typically give you a shot of the planet itself exploding.
Yeah.
But I feel like they really immersed you in like the city that Jor-El was living in.
Yeah, and it was smart to give, I felt like it was good to give Jor-El a lot to do, and not just on Krypton. I feel like throughout the movie, they really got their money's worth with Russell Crowe playing Jor-El, which was cool. I'm glad they did that. But, you know, you start off with the whole thing of Krypton is dying. Krypton has run out of resources, so they drill to the core and it makes the planet unstable, so now they're going to die. And Jor-El knows this. General Zod knows this. They just go about it very differently. Jor-El is kind of like, yeah, they're not going to listen to me, so I'm just going to create a backup plan with my son. And Zod's like, we're going to make the council pay for what they've done, and also we're going to make a new Krypton, but with like a genetically coded people that's to my liking.
Right. What I love about this intro is it's like very intense and exciting from the get-go. Like they really throw you into it, but not in a way that they have in the other ones where it's just Superman's parents putting him in a pod. Like it is action heavy, and it's like Jor-El struggling and like almost not making it to like try and ensure his like son's success.
Yeah, and they kind of make him more important from a Kryptonian standpoint, because in this he's the first natural birth in a long time, and they kind of set up that they kind of these like farms where they genetically grow humans to have like certain roles, kind of like bees or ants. And the fact that Superman was born with, or Kal-El was born with, free choice, free will, you know, he's not assigned to a role like everyone else on Krypton, and that's what makes him special even to a Kryptonian, let alone to Earth.
It definitely gives the whole situation a lot more urgency, right? It makes you more worried about the future of Kal-El and whether or not Jor-El is going to be able to send off his son. And it all leads up to this kind of hand-to-hand combat with Zod as they're about to send Superman off.
Yeah, and Zod tries to stop him. I feel like Zod is set up so well in this movie compared to the previous movies. He kind of shows up for like a split second in that first movie, and then he's obviously the main villain of the second movie, but he's not... He doesn't have this relationship with Jor-El like he appears to have in this one. They're fighting. They obviously have known each other for a long time. And even later, when Zod's talking to Superman, he's like, yeah, I killed your dad, and it haunts me every day. Like, he didn't want to do it, but he did it because it was his duty. And I think that's cool characterization, right, for a villain.
Totally. And you made a great point when we were watching the movie about this kind of exposition in the beginning being necessary for Zod's character later on. Kind of that, like, this whole buildup, we all know Superman's story at this point, right? It all comes to the same outcome. But building kind of this world and the disaster around it and then Zod's motives and everything, like, it really helped him be a proper villain.
I agree with you. I think his, like, punishment, they didn't call it the Phantom Zone until much later in the movie, but they were just kind of like, you're going to be in exile in this black hole for a while.
Yeah. And
he's like, well, that sucks. And so he gets he gets banished. Says, I will find him, like, a gajillion times. And I think it was nice, though, how later in the film he explains how they got out. And it makes sense within a sci-fi world. It's not like, I don't even remember how in the second one they got out. It was like a solar wave hits it at just the right moment.
And like shattered the weird glass prism that was the, like, it wasn't very well explained or how they got there. Like, it.
No.
So yeah, I was much appreciative of kind of how airtight and low-key clever, like, this whole setup was, how they found him, how, like, you know, him activating the ship, let them know where Earth was and all of that stuff. And I mean, the Phantom Zone just looks really cool in this. I might keep coming back to that, but, like, the look of this movie is fantastic.
It looks cool. I mean, it's definitely so super sci-fi, you know, like, it, the ships in Krypton, I feel like, are heavily influenced by how the ships look in Alien, like the inside of the engineer ships.
Totally. Kind of like the ribbing on the walls and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it. I think it's a cool look, and it definitely fits for this Superman. It's a new Superman. All of the previous ones had like a fun vibe to them, like very colorful. This one, while it's not as colorful, it takes on a much more serious tone, and we can get into that a bit later once we've covered a bit more and we can talk more in depth about it, but it's definitely more of a strong sci-fi movie.
Totally. Personally, as like an aspiring editor, I think one of the cleanest cuts that I feel like thoroughly like drove the story forward was as soon as we got his ship landing on Earth, they took us right into Clark Kent as an adult on a fishing boat, just working a blue collar job.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's kind of cool that he's able to do that for himself. And when they see the oil rig on fire, he doesn't hesitate. He goes and saves them. And it's a cool scene, right? And he washes up on shore, but that it kind of brings up the whole non-linear storytelling of the origin, at least, like, for about at least the first act, it definitely cuts between him as an adult trying to find where he's from, and then cuts back to scenes from his childhood. You've got the bus rescue, you've got the bit where he's in class and his like senses are getting overstimulated, like he can see x-ray, he's hearing everything,
which I adore. Because I feel like they don't cover that in just about any other story, how difficult it must be to grow up with these kind of superpowers, being an actual child, right? Obviously, he has good moral fiber, good parents, and is, like, beyond powerful. But, like, the confusion and struggle kind of going through that, I love that they even touched on that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think it's smart because it also comes into play later in the movie.
Totally.
With Zod and his goons, and I'm glad that they set that up finally.
No, it was very well done. I think this is the tightest story, Superman-wise.
Yeah, I think a big reason why this non-linearity works is the screenplay was written by David S. Goyer, who helped write the screenplay and the story for The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, which are Christopher Nolan-directed films. And Christopher Nolan also helped develop the story for this film. And he is famous for non-linear storytelling. And it shows in this movie. And I think it works. For it keeps the origin exciting. It doesn't feel like they have to go from point A to point B on his childhood. It can bounce around and it flows still.
Totally. Flow is a great word for it. It totally helps flesh out kind of his childhood character and his adult self as you discover more about him.
And with these people writing the story, it helps that Zack Snyder kind of has a more serious tone with his previous films like Watchmen or 300. But definitely the serious tone of the story itself comes from the writers, you know, David S. Goyer, and with help with the story from Christopher Nolan, because if they just got finished writing the stories for The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises, they are famously very realistic, very serious movies. And you can tell that they were trying to translate that into a Superman movie.
Totally. Some very gritty feels, things that made you kind of question like superhero vibes. Like it's not all just kind of giggles and good times.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think one of the best ways that they did this, you mentioned this during the movie, was changing up the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
It felt very deep, and dark is maybe the wrong word, but more serious.
Like more mature. Like more mature. Like the piano theme that they got going on, like that feels mature. It's not bombastic, but it's enough to be like, this is important.
Totally. And it's beautiful. And we were speculating, you know, what this might mean for the next movie and whether they're going to keep the theme or that was just for nostalgic trailer feels. You said you would like for them to, you know, possibly keep this theme or even come up with a new one.
I would be happy if they came up with a brand new theme. I feel like having that classic Superman theme in the trailers is super awesome. I love it. And if they keep it, like, that's fine too. But it would be cool if they went a different route like they did with Man of Steel, where in this one they got Hans Zimmer to write the new score, and I think it turned out beautifully, and I think they could do that again.
Totally, totally.
But like, would you rather them come up with a new score, or do you want them to kind of mix in the classic Superman theme?
It'd be fun for it to pull up. I don't think I would want it to be as prevalent as it is in the earlier movies. Even though it looks like he is going for a lighter feel than Man of Steel, it would be fun for James Gunn to try and make it his own.
I agree with you. See, I kind of going back to those flashbacks. The bus rescue scene I think is cool because you get a little bit of a planting with Pete, who's kind of a bully, but he becomes a friend, or at least like sympathetic towards Clark.
Yeah.
And you have Pete and his mom, you know, freaking out at the Kent's house later. And it's one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie is when Jonathan Kent goes out to talk to Clark. And, you know, Clark's like, what was I supposed to do? Like, let him die? And he's like, maybe. Like, there's no clear answer on this. But you need to be careful because the world is not prepared for a alien. And he shows Clark like the ship that he arrived in and kind of talks to him about, you know, how they found him. And one of my favorite lines is, you know, when he's like, you have to take this responsibility with you. You know, you have to be the man you want to be. And Clark's like, can I just keep pretending to be your son? And Jonathan's like, you are my son, and hugs him. I love it.
So wholesome.
And Kevin Costner kills it as Jonathan.
No, I'm with you there. And they did a fantastic job building out his character as kind of riding this line between not really knowing what he's doing, but just being very wise and recognizing kind of the impact that Clark was going to have on the humans of Earth, right? Recognizing the importance of like him hiding his identity and really just trying to meet him where he's at, being like, listen, this is going to matter later. And I know it sucks now, which we'll get to in a moment. But yeah, I love this kind of back and forth flashing back, and that they're kind of highlighting Clark working all of these blue collar jobs. I feel like that kind of feel is essential, because you don't get a lot of that in all these other movies. He just kind of shows up at the Daily Planet most of the time.
Right. That's his only job.
Right. But being the farm boy that he is, I feel like this is absolutely essential for his character, right? This is the kind of work that he knows, and it's what he would be good at.
Yeah, like manual labor. You're so right.
Right, working as like a laborer. At one point, we get him as just a waiter at a diner, and it's kind of a classic small town feel. I almost thought he was back in Smallville for a moment.
Right.
But we get this log trucker that's coming in, and he's just being, you know, just classic, just jerk energy.
Totally.
And, you know, he's harassing the waitress, and Clark tells him to stop. And we get a lot of moments in this in the movie, which I love, where Clark is tested with having to keep his cool around right. people that he could really, really put in their place.
Total willpower.
Yeah. And this guy, you know, dumps a beer on him. He's like calling him names and stuff like that. Throws a can at his head, which you said was reminiscent of the new Superman trailer.
Totally. I love the part where he like goes to shove it, but he just like does not move. It's like a wall.
Holy cow. Yeah. And the guy's like look of fear. I feel like that was like kind of like a bad A moment for Superman.
Totally. To show that like, don't mess with him, but he's not going to do anything to you, which is almost an even greater show of power.
Oh my gosh. Well, right. And the guy's talking all big, because he could, in that moment, you could see he kind of broke and was like, oh, this would not go right. how I want it to.
Right.
But the girl's talking him down. So anyways, he leaves, and the guy, you know, finishes his meal, gets to be the jerk that he is. And then he leaves, and his truck that he pulled up in with all the logs and everything is like destroyed, like logs like shoved through the cab. It's all twisted and messed up. And what I love about this is it shows that, like, Superman is kind of human.
Oh, yeah. No, like, because in a perfect world, he would just be the bigger guy and walk away. But, yeah, are you kidding me? Like, yeah, he was so mean.
Right. He gets to be kind of, like, vindictive in this moment. He gets to hate this guy and want revenge. I love that so much. I feel like a lot of these other stories have struggle moments, but they don't really show him acting out unless he's affected by Black Kryptonite.
Right. The next job we kind of see him at is he's working for the government, you know, or something like that, in, you know, in the Arctic. And Lois Lane, we see her for the first time. She's coming to Canada to check out what the ship is that's landed there, and Clark Kent's there, but his name is Joe. Like, that's his alter ego to his alter ego. And he makes it onto the ship, and it's interesting because it's a substitute for the Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah.
It's just an alien ship instead of an actual fortress where it was like meant for him to show up and learn about Krypton. It's kind of like a random ship that luckily his little key card lets him access the information that they wanted him to. But I don't know. What are your thoughts about them not having a Fortress of Solitude?
It's so funny you ask that, because that was something I specifically wrote down. I think it's a very clever way, and in this story alone, it works incredibly well to drive the plot forward. We get introduced to Lois Lane. We get introduced to the army general and commander that are at the base, and they become integral characters later on. And we get Superman kind of showing his powers to Lois, right? She kind of figures out that he is a guy, and then her whole side story trying to figure out the story comes into play, right? So I feel like all these elements wouldn't work very well if they had established, like, kind of as they did in the other ones, where, you know, he just goes out alone and builds it himself or uses the crystal, right? I'm not opposed to it. I feel like it drives the story forward, and even the look of it is kind of cool, right? He just lands it in the Arctic somewhere, and he's just kind of chilling on the spaceship. It makes sense how Jor-El could be showing up like that and controlling certain things. I think it's a good look.
You're so right. It does set up so much. And I think a cool aspect, while it is extremely short-lived, is Lois Lane kind of going along the trail, right, to figure out that he lived in Smallville. I think that's a really cool bit. And like I said, it's really short, but it's set up here and it works. And you mentioned Jor-El. I like that it's a not like a hologram. It's just Russell Crowe, but the audience knows that it's a hologram, so you don't have to like have a weird effect. Like, it's okay.
Right. We're all willing to accept we're in like an advanced enough sci-fi world that he can just be that. And I think they only showed him one at maybe two moments, like morphing. throughout the movie, kind of as a hologram, and it was only when he was interacted with by physical matter. But I think what I like about the Fortress of Solitude, I say in air quotes, is kind of the temporary feel of it, right? Superman doesn't know who he is yet. He doesn't know he's going to like want a place like this. This is typically a place for him, like when he's struggling with very adult, very established Superman things, right? So it's kind of maybe crazy that they jumped the gun in some of these other movies and just had him have his place. I think that they did an incredible job setting up Superman as a character in this movie, because they end him at the Daily Planet. I feel like there's room for him to create a Fortress of Solitude, which he would probably have more need for at this point.
Right. And the Daily Planet is tied into him keeping an eye on things, being closer to Lois. Like, it just makes more sense.
Totally. Totally. So they don't throw you into the thick of, you know, I am an established Superman yet. We really get to walk with him along that journey. And I think that's yet another reason I love this movie so much.
I'm with you. And in this ship, he's introduced to his cape and, or I guess his whole suit, really. And I love this Superman suit. It is my favorite one. Granted, I've only seen trailers of the new one, but this Superman suit is like, we've talked about it, like, this is our Superman, right? This is totally the one we grew up with.
Totally. It is beautiful. The colors, right? The darker scheme. I love that so much. The S is nice and big. And it is just perfectly form-fitting to the god that Henry Cavill is.
Right, those muscles.
I've said it before, and I'm excited for David Cornsweet's Superman, but I believe Henry Cavill is like just physique, like acting. I feel like he played it so masterfully that like he kind of is Superman in my mind. And once again, we grew up on these. It was hard for me to like let the idea of him go. But rewatching this movie, it just kind of reignited for me how absolutely incredible he is as Superman.
Yeah, he does do a great job. I also enjoy the casting of Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White. I think he does a great job as a newspaper mogul, right? I am kind of indifferent to Amy Adams. I know you have some reservations about her as Lois.
Yeah, until recently, I haven't seen her in many things that I've enjoyed her in. I watched Arrival, and I did like her character in that.
She's good in that, yeah.
I think I just have a harder time with her character because I feel like she's not incredibly proactive in a lot of her roles. She, I don't know, her characters seem weak to me at times. And granted, I hate her Lois further into the series. I think Batman versus Superman was kind of my breaking point around that.
Right, and we'll get to that for sure.
But yeah, there are definitely moments where I have a harder time with her. And she's written well in this. I don't have any issues with kind of her side stories. It all makes sense.
And like I said, like when she's following the trail of Superman, I feel like that's a good Lois Lane thing to do. It makes you be like, okay, she is a good investigative reporter.
Totally. And I mean, for somebody who hasn't even read the comics, if you do a watch through like this, her character stays that path all the way through. They've all agreed that is Lois Lane, which I like.
Yeah, I definitely think, while I don't think she's the strongest female protagonist we've had, my vote is still with Lana Lang from Superman 3. I think she is the best Lois, in my opinion. Margaret Kidder, I believe is her name, from the original ones. I think she does a fine job. Like, she plays the role that she's asked to. But Amy Adams is probably my favorite Lois Lane thus far.
Right on. And I'm immensely excited to see their new rendition of it and how she kind of plays a role in all of that.
Totally. And another thing is cool that, you know, she knows he's Superman, so we don't have to have that back and forth. But it's nice to have that out of the way in the first act of the first movie. But yeah, after that, we get his first flight, and he kind of hops a little bit. He's kind of getting the hang of it, and then he kind of takes a second. And then he flies. And it's really cool. The music is blaring. It's so epic. And obviously, there's been a lot of advancements in the technology as far as movie making goes. So the flying looks amazing.
It really does.
And I think a big contributor of that is they only do close-up shots of him flying and kind of more distant shots. I felt like those original ones and Superman Returns had a lot of medium shots where it was just enough where you could see him and the background, it wasn't...
It's kind of the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't work as well. I think they were smart with their shot choices when people were flying in this.
Totally, and they got some fun shots of him, you know, flying all around Earth and some really just cinematic moments, right, with him up close, obviously, and I'm with you there. First flight, this was fantastic. And one of the elements that I love most that kind of shows up throughout the movie and even makes it into a cutscene later is how the earth around him is kind of affected when he's about to take flight. You can see kind of like bits of dirt or, you know, like water at times, right? Just kind of like lifting off the ground. You can like sense there's like some power. It's so cool. And we get that several times throughout this movie. And then in the cutscene after, at the very end of Batman versus Superman in that cutscene, kind of a moment telling us that he's maybe not dead, which is like, I remember losing my mind in theater. Like it's such a split second. They played that so well. We're obviously not reviewing that, but what masterful. I'm such a fan of that.
It's so cool. I'm with you there. It's great. And after that first flight, though, we get the flashback of Jonathan Kent's death. But before the actual tornado pulls up, they're kind of arguing in the car, and it's an interesting argument, right? Superman's, or Clark Kent, is like, I want to help people. Like, I need to go, you know, you aren't my real parents. And Martha's like, stop it, right? But Jonathan's like, well, you know, maybe our best isn't good enough. And he's kind of just playing the dad card, you know, just the total dad vibes there for like the small town, Kevin Costner, you know. And it's a good like conflict, kind of that Uncle Ben, Peter Parker thing where, of course, right before he dies, they were arguing.
Right, just kind of butting heads with your like father figure.
Totally. And then the tornado shows up and they're all running away. And what's cool is Jonathan Kent is helping people get out, and he helps, you know, the kid and the family. And then he goes to help the dog and he doesn't make it. And Superman technically could have saved him, but he tells him not to. And I remember when I was younger that was like a controversial thing. Like people thought that was dumb, but I don't know. I think it works.
Well, and I feel like it works because they really leaned into that. And that was like the overarching theme of this is like, are people able to handle Superman? At what point is he able to show his powers?
Right. And they definitely like drill that into you. You're right. They do the work.
Yeah. And several years after this movie came out, that scene still hits so hard.
Absolutely.
And honestly, just a bit of love for Kevin Costner's character as Jonathan Kent's, you know, being just kind of a farmer. You wouldn't expect him to care that much about a dog, but family dog means a lot, right? So for totally. Him to be sacrificing himself, maybe unknowingly, for, you know, risking his life for that,
yeah,
means a lot.
I agree. And we'll talk about it when we cover Batman v Superman, but man, his character has one of the best monologues in a superhero movie, in my opinion, in that movie. But I think he's so good in that role.
He has some of the greatest like father-son moments, I'll say. I love him as Jonathan Kent.
Totally.
What I love about this kind of non-linear storytelling is kind of how they reintroduce Zod. They don't really explain how they got there. They just, you know, start with the military being like, oh, there's like a ship orbiting the moon.
Right.
They're a little bit worried about it. And then it just shows all the TVs on Earth being tuned to this one channel, right? Zod just hijacks everything. And it is such a scary entrance. I'm such a fan. Because if you're thinking about this out of context of like superheroes or anything like that, it is literally just aliens that have taken over your TV with a message that just says you are not alone. But totally. In like this really staticky and kind of glitchy way that's like, it's menacing. It's not even like a hopeful, like, well, no, we're here to be friends. It's like kind of scary. And then I don't know how they did it, but the visuals of Zod not really having his face, but sort of being a like face humanoidish, like yeah, on the screen looked so cool and probably so alien to so many people. And anyways, yeah, him calling them out and just being like, look, one of us is down there and we want him.
Yeah, great entrance. And I love that Superman has to kind of grapple with, do I help the Earth? Do I trust Zod? I don't know. And you get that kind of, it's kind of later in the movie, but you get another flashback of when a bunch of kids beat him up and Pete helps him up, which is awesome. But then Clark's talking with Jonathan again, and he's like, I really wanted to hit that kid. And Jonathan kind of gives him the pep talk of like, you have to build these characteristics when you're young, because when you're an adult, they're going to have massive consequences. And it was at that moment, I kind of realized that this movie really showed us where Superman gets his ethics from, which is a huge part of what makes Superman, Superman.
Totally. Well, and I love that they drilled it in that it's from like Jonathan's simple wisdom that he kind of comes by these morals. In a lot of the movies, they kind of stress, especially with the honesty, right, that that's like one of his superpowers, or that, you know, his moral fiber is just part of him like being Kryptonian. But like a lot of it is nurture.
Yeah, it's really great. And with that like struggle, he goes to talk to a priest. And I love that part because he's talking with them and he flat out tells him, like, I'm the alien that they're looking for. And the priest isn't immediately like, ew, yeah, go over there, obviously, dude. He talks him through it. And there's a shot where Superman's talking about it. And right behind him is this giant stained glass window of Jesus. And we've talked in the past about kind of the symbolism of people looking to Superman to save them no matter what, and not really taking like independence in their own hands. And I felt like while they didn't really cover it in this movie, that was a really cool symbolic framing.
Holy cow, I could not agree more. And it almost has tones later, especially in Batman vs. Superman.
Definitely.
Where they have, right, the crowds, like everybody's wanting to touch him. They revere him as some sort of god. And, you know, Bruce Wayne simply can't handle that. But I love that they set that up. And once again, just true to his character, raised Christian, you could see the cross around his mom's neck. Like, it would make sense for him to go to a preacher with this, like, just universal struggle he is having right now.
Absolutely. So Superman decides to give himself up, goes to the ship, and kind of a different way that they did it, and I think it works a lot better than just straight kryptonite, is the atmosphere of Krypton is what kind of dampens his powers. I really like that aspect, and it makes sense why, you know, Zod and them aren't just flying around immediately. And I like that kryptonite, while it gets brought up later, I think it was a smart move to kind of just come up with a more logical sci-fi explanation for, you know, a weakening power.
Totally. And they totally could cover it in this movie, because this is the first live action Superman we've covered that recognizes that the sun is what gives Superman his powers.
You're so right. And yeah, like when Zod's on Earth, Superman kind of takes off his mask. Or does he take off his mask, or does Zod take his own mask off?
He damages Zod, which that's hurts right. The mask, and Zod goes to take it off.
Okay, that's right. So a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love that he's kind of getting overstimulated with all the senses like Clark did as a kid. And that's like a advantage that he has. And I think that was a clever way to kind of bring in that, you know, without kryptonite again, right?
Totally. I mean, once again, so many plantings and payoffs. The story just felt tight on this. I was a fan. And it is kind of his advantage. They definitely use it with some of the other Kryptonians as they're fighting Superman and take off their masks, right? Like, it's just kind of it's a recurring thing, right? That Superman has the advantage because he is on home turf. He's familiar with the environment.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, then they kind of get into a Smallville fight, which, here's the thing. This movie's story structure, it technically has three acts, and the third act, while it is very long, I think the reason it feels even longer is the midpoint, which I believe is the ship, like Zod's entrance, feels like it should be the kind of beginning of the third act. Because then they have a big fight, and it's epic, and I love the Smallville fight, but they should have made it shorter. And also, like, afterwards, you get the whole thing with the military being like, oh, Superman's good now. And I don't know. It's tough for me to kind of wrap my head around it, but I feel like it goes from first act, you get the origin stuff, and then you get fight scene, third act. You know what I mean? Like, third act, and while there technically is a break between the second and the third act later on, it kind of all flows and feels like it's one thing. Sort of similarly to a recent superhero film that we went and saw together, Thunderbolts, where the structure feels a little off, but when you look at it, you know, big view after the fact, yeah, there are three acts. It just doesn't feel that way when you're watching it.
Sometimes hard to pinpoint where you're at.
Yeah.
Totally. And you made a funny note that this movie is also guilty of sort of having that like tacked on 3.5 act, which we can get into later. But honestly, I don't think it's entirely to the detriment of this movie.
No, I mean, I think the issue is not necessarily the fourth act itself. It's kind of the stuff that comes before. Like, this fight in Smallville is awesome. I think that the Smallville fight and the fight with the world terraforming machine in the Indian Ocean, the length of them kind of makes you go like, okay, I'm kind of like, I get it. He can fight. It's cool. So that when he fights with Zod at the end, you're like, eh. Like, if they'd have shortened those, I feel like it would have made the Zod fight more impactful.
Fair enough. It would have hit harder. I can understand that. One thing I love about the fighting in this film, with the Kryptonians in Smallville and then with Zod later on, is how kind of just messy it is. It makes a lot of sense for Superman. This is probably the first time he's had like an actual fight, right? Because he's, for one, fighting back, and for two, fighting with people that like can match his strength. And it's kind of messy. You can see him like throw, like overcommitting punches, and he's not doing too hot against these like trained soldiers. And I think it works especially well later on when Zod is now introduced to these new powers, how messy his fighting becomes, because he is a general, he's very trained, but with these new powers, like, he is having a hard time controlling them.
You are so right. I think that the camera work helps with it, and the fact that computer technology is advanced to where they can have messy, shaky shots but still make the CGI look good.
Totally.
Because the closest thing we've had to this would be in the second Superman when he's fighting Zod and his goons. But all the shots had to be really still or super, you know, uniform so that they could do the effects of them flying. And it felt very clean, which worked for the movie, but it's definitely a lot more exciting in this movie.
Exciting is a great word for it. They really pull you into it.
But the reason the Smallville fight gets wrapped up is they kind of... Zod comes and like picks him up, which isn't super clear, but okay, whatever. And I guess they're kind of like, oh, this doesn't really matter. Let's just leave. But then they're like, Krypton scientist is like, oh, it's actually like the codec for all of Superman's race is in his cells, which... is kind of like a random upping of the stakes where now Zod is like, oh, now I can just kill him and get what I want.
Yeah.
It's random, but it's like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on it?
I don't think it's entirely out of place. I feel that way about a lot of changes that they made in this, just because they set up a lot of them. So with that cut back to the original scene where, you know, they were downloading all the codec into him, it makes sense. It explains that scene from earlier. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's maybe necessary per se to up the stakes.
That's fair.
But I don't necessarily disagree with it because it feels less out of the blue than, you know, some of the decisions that we've seen in these earlier films.
That is very true. But yeah, then they go blow up the ship by sucking it into a black hole and their plot is foiled. They're all dead except for Zod. And he kind of gives Superman this monologue of like, you've taken everything. I have nothing left to lose. And then they proceed to have a very big fight in the city. And it's cool. I think kind of like we were saying earlier, it might be diminished just because of all the fights that have happened prior. But on its own, it's a cool fight, I think.
It does well, real fast. Just before they start this fight, Lois is getting close to Superman. They're all, like, blown away that...
You're right. I forgot about that.
You know, they stop them, and this is, like, the end of the movie. And she says the words... They say it's all downhill after the first kiss, which I...
It's so random. Like, what?
Yeah. It's shocking to me, because obviously, you know, she didn't write the line. The writers did, and the writing has been, like... pretty dope up until this point. So that just feels That was like the one part that like took me out of the moment. I was like, what?
Maybe romance isn't their strong suit.
I guess so. They kiss. It's a sweet moment. But yeah, that line, I felt needed a mention because it was not in place at all.
So I'm curious. That kind of feels like could be a natural conclusion to the film. Do you wish Zod would have just been sucked up into the black hole? Or are you kind of glad that they have that extra fight? Do you think it really adds anything?
The fight itself, I mentioned before, I liked how messy it was, right? Zod trying to figure out his powers.
Right,
it's
right.
Extra epic, right? Because that's like the first like Superman v Superman kind of feel that we get, right? The rest of it is just him struggling against the Kryptonian atmosphere or just the unnaturally strong Kryptonians. I think the conclusion to that fight is necessary.
Okay, yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, as far as adding to the film, it sets up some things for Batman v Superman, which is kind of fun. You get the LexCorp truck, which you had pointed out. I didn't notice that until this recent viewing.
And I mean, neither did I, but yeah.
Throwing
at him. You can see why Lex has a vendetta now.
Totally. And yeah, his one truck. But it does set up Bruce Wayne's motivations, right? At the beginning of Batman v Superman, you get to see how like it's destroying the city. It destroys the company and a lot of people that have worked for him. It kills a lot of people. And so it sets up that. But when this movie came out, you wouldn't know that it was setting up that, right?
No. So plenty of people I've talked to, right? That was one big qualm they had with this movie. It was like, it felt like it ended there. And that extra 20 minutes tacked on just felt kind of painful because they were expecting it to be over. Which, you know, I can see. And honestly, as like rewatching it through, it felt like it hit less. Like, we sat through that fight and we're like, I felt like it was longer in the theaters, right? Like, we were kind of surprised. It felt like it was over sooner. But yeah, I feel like that is the big climax, the most like cumulative moment in this film is when he is struggling against like the way he was raised, his moral fiber, like the entire way he has acted in this film up until this point is like, you don't kill people.
Right.
And he is forced to like choose between killing Zod or letting Zod like and his madness kill this innocent family.
Yeah, it's a great moment. And it's kind of a meme now when he like yells, but I feel like it works, right? Like if you were watching this for the first time and you weren't aware of like the meme culture, like it's a good scene.
I'm gonna be honest, I was unaware of that meme. It hits. I feel like it's a solid moment, the echo and everything, but I could see how somebody could slap that over something dumb.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, and honestly, I feel like for a lot of movies, it's sometimes hard to go back after you've seen the memes. We just watched Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
And that is like a meme movie at this point.
It pretty much is. It's lost all of its like, you know, blunt force impact of its story. It's right. All just memes now.
Any seriousness it had up until that moment, even the really like intense moments towards the end. Anyways, yes, I'm a big fan of that moment. And he's just kind of broken and Lois comes to comfort him. And that feels like a very bonding moment for them, which is important as well. And I feel like that segues very smoothly into the rest of that kind of cleanup post-climax story.
Right. You get, at the very end, kind of, I think it's such a clever way. I can understand why they ended with the Daily Planet, because it's a great, like, next step. But I love the bit when they have the flashbacks of him as a kid with the cape and just family life. You see his mom and dad just enjoying their small town life in Kansas, and Superman just having a blast playing with the dog. Like, it's so innocent, and I think it works really well.
Totally. It is intensely wholesome. Though I did have a thought while watching that is, what would their rendition of superheroes be in that universe? Because I feel like we see a kid with a red cape standing with, you know, hands on hips. It's like he's trying to be Superman, right?
Right.
So I was curious, like, is there, I don't know, canonically some kind of comic book, some or whatnot that he would be trying to like replicate?
I don't know. That's a funny point, though.
Anyways, very wholesome.
It could be like a Zorro thing, right? Because he has a cape. you know, maybe not imitating a superhero, but just a hero.
Okay, fair enough. And I mean, that is, you know, Batman's, that's the movie they watch.
That's so true.
When his parents are killed, that I feel like that's about right. That could be their connection, other than Martha in Batman versus Superman. It's just a mutual love for Zorro.
Totally. So to kind of wrap up, I'm super interested on your opinion of Zack Snyder and his directing style. A lot of people give him crap for the story of this movie, but as we've covered, he did not write this movie. He directed it, which is a different role entirely, and obviously has a huge impact on the movie. But for Man of Steel alone, we'll obviously talk about future ones later, but Man of Steel alone, thoughts on Zack Snyder's direction and how he took it?
Unopposed. Honestly, I think the darker tones that he tried to work with in the story and everything did well. You can definitely see a bit of David S. Goyer and Christopher Nolan's influence, right, in kind of the direction that the story went. But overall, I think it worked well for this movie. I feel like it held up. We mentioned, we noticed a lot of smash zooms.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a pretty iconic, especially in space when you're trying to focus on something, you know, kind of that's getting further away. It felt almost like Transformers-esque at times, right?
It adds like a sense of realism in some shots when they're flying around. It's like, oh, cool. Sometimes it doesn't work as well.
Right. But overall, I'm pretty okay with like where he went with this. I'm going to be honest, going into this, I had forgotten that Zack Snyder directed this. And, you know, there's immense controversy around later work that he's directed. But honestly, I don't have any serious qualms with the way that he approached it.
Yeah, a lot of people really dog on him and say that his style is bleak and that it's the same across every movie and it's just slow motion shots. There are like almost no slow motion shots in this movie.
No.
And obviously there are a ton in the Snyder Cut, but we'll cover that at some way later time. But I don't know. I feel like he has a style. And if you watch a movie like 300, he is a great guy to adapt a graphic novel from because he obviously loves the art of a comic book and he's trying to translate that into film, which is very commendable. And with today's technology, he's able to pull it off. And I think it works for this film, at least.
Totally. And like I mentioned before, there are some intensely cinematic shots throughout this that like I was kind of just taken away by. Like it was beautiful. One of my favorites is when he's under the terraforming machine and it's like all its gravity's coming down, this beam of light, right? And he's fighting against it. I love that sequence.
I'm with you. And even little things, like in the flashback when he's getting beat up by the kids, you see him get helped up by Pete, but then it kind of pans down to the pole he was gripping on and it's like bent metal. And it tells you all you need to know, right?
Totally.
You almost could have not had the conversation where he's like, I really wanted to hit that kid. And just from visual storytelling, you would have been able to pick that up.
Totally. That is one of like the laws in filmmaking is show, not tell. And I feel like Zack exemplifies that.
I agree. In this movie, he does a good job. I will stand by. I think that this up until, you know, I have not seen the new one, obviously, that's coming out in July, but this is my favorite Superman movie thus far.
I'm with you there. And I mean, it's kind of hard to compare because, you know, there's a 20-ish year gap between like most of the other renditions.
Right.
So obviously the technology is crazy different, but even story writing, I mean, there are great movies in the 1970s and 60s even, right? A lot of the other Supermans just kind of struggled in that realm.
Yeah, overall, very good. Yeah, next one, we're going to go back to an animated film. It's going to be Superman, Man of Tomorrow. It was kind of the first one in DC's animated Tomorrowverse. We're excited to watch. I've seen it before. I really enjoy it. I think there's a lot we can pull from it and talk about. It'll be your first time, right?
Totally.
And so it'll be a good conversation. I'm excited to talk about it. But yeah, this has been kind of the big one I've been excited to talk about. And I feel like we got a lot of fun thoughts out.
I'm with you there. Cannot recommend this movie enough. I feel like it's a great watch. And once again, just lots of love for Henry Cavill and the score of the story. I feel like it all just came together really well.
Absolutely. It's definitely a must watch before the new one. But yeah, thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
See you later.